Hi, I'm Clemmy Telford, and it's time to get open and get honest. Each week, I interview a guest about a topic that we, as a society, often shy away from. From sex lives to salaries, life and death, religion and real bodies, no subject is off the table. Welcome to Honestly, the podcast. Today on this podcast, I interview my pals Deborah James and Simon Thompson. As it happens, Deborah, aka Bell Babe, is a big fan of our sponsor, F&F Clothing. She can often be seen rocking a slinky number from them on Instagram. But for me, it's not just about the clothes, it's the fact that F&F Clothing enjoy challenging expectations. There's lots that has surprised me about what they, as an affordable retailer, offer. The fact that they cater for sizes 6 to 22, and are one of the biggest retailers in the UK pledging a more sustainable future. All brilliantly surprising and make me proud to have them on board with Honestly Podcast. Hi, welcome to Honestly Podcast. I'm Clemmy Telford and I'm here to do one of my favourite things. No, not avoiding watching anything remotely scary on Netflix. Having a properly frank, open chat about tricky, sticky and often not spoken about subjects. Today we've got in two pals of mine. One of them is a multi-award winning restaurateur and blogger. The other is an ex-deputy head teacher turned multi-award winning podcaster, newspaper columnist, Instagrammer. They are Simon Thompson, a.k.a. Curry and Cancer, and Deborah James, a.k.a. Bell Babe. Hello, girls.
Yay! Hey. Hello. Thanks for having us, Clemmy.
Oh, I'm very, very pleased to have you here. And what I didn't mention in the intros, because they are people aside from this, both these excellent women have cancer, but we're going to get onto that shortly. I'd like to begin this with a quick fire round. As the title of this podcast suggests, it's all about being honest. And to get us all in the mood, we're going to start with some quick fire questions. Are you ready?
No pressure. Put us on the spot.
Wasn't expecting this.
This is fun. These are up your street. A great meal or great sex?
Oh, a great meal.
Debs?
Great meal.
Fame or fortune?
Oh, fame for the right reasons.
Yeah, fortune because... Oh, that's a hard one.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, what a good question.
You could just interpret it so differently.
Yeah, but then I figured I could have a lot of laughs with a lot of money.
True.
But then fame for the right reason, like if you're in our position, just get the message out.
I mean, are you saying you want both?
Well, can we have both?
All right, why not?
Start the question again. What's the question?
Guys, can I just remind you, this is the quick fire round. I'm looking for mainly like one word answers, two. Anyway, leave or remain? Oh. Everyone panics about they're going to say the wrong answer here.
Remain.
I'm staying out of this one, girls. Okay. I can't.
Okay, fine. Moving on. Reincarnation, probable or not a chance?
I was definitely a cat beforehand.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, reincarnation. Yeah, you know what? I'm starting to, obviously going through this like cancer thing. Shiz. Maybe, yeah, I think so.
Okay, social media, good or bad?
Good.
Good.
What star sign are you both?
Libran.
Capricorn.
Capricorn.
Have you ever committed a crime?
Oh, yes, involving my cars. Lots of parking fines. Does that count?
Got my first speeding offence the other day. Is that a crime?
Do you believe in a god?
Yes.
I'm not sure.
This is a bit more niche and from my own experience, i.e. an ongoing argument with my husband. Have you ever peed in a swimming pool?
100%.
No.
Yeah, he tells me that people play.
You?
Yes, and I'm like, I said to him, loads of people wee in swimming pools. He's like, no, they don't. You need to, get real.
I genuinely haven't.
Well, now you know. Maybe you should try it. When did you last cry?
Oh, gosh.
Last night.
The other day.
When did you last weigh yourself?
Oh, well, I'm at Cancer Weight Watchers, which, no, I'm not. It's not a thing. It's just that what happens when you're on treatment every 2 weeks.
You have to weigh in.
You have to weigh in. But actually in the polar opposite to what everybody else does to check that you haven't lost enough weight.
You're keeping your weight up. When did you last weigh yourself?
I can't remember. Must have been over a month ago.
Biggest regret?
Worrying about what the future held when I didn't have cancer, because now I actually have to worry.
I'd say a similar answer. I'd say I wasn't very kind to myself before cancer. And now, I look to look after myself actively.
Different tact. This is mainly for you, Simon, but what's your favourite condiment?
Oh, God, there's so many. So, being Pakistani, we're like, it's the home of condiments, basically. And oh, ketchup is actually an Indian word. There you go. So, ketchup's number one.
Ketchup. Debs.
See, if I said truffle oil, I just sound like a total twat.
No, go with it. Why not?
Some mayo with your truffle chips.
Favourite tipple?
Wine. Red wine.
Yeah, I'm a whiskey drinker.
Are you?
Yeah. Mm. Or margaritas, so it's tequila or whiskey. I drink a lot of wine as well, you know.
Pretty
So just anything, basically. Anything just with anything. An ABV.
But I love whiskey. I love whiskey so much. Yeah.
Okay.
When or where are you happiest?
When I'm with my loved ones.
Yeah, running along the river or walking along the river.
Oh, that's a good one. Good answer. Not that it's a competition, but it's a nice, it's a nice image. And what is your motto, if you have one, or what do you live by?
Everything in balance. Fuck it. Drink the wine. Do the 5K. Live for today.
Well, someone sent me a poster and it said, when life gives you lemons, make a jar. So a jar is pickle in my language. And I just thought it was quite wonderful.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Thanks, girls. I mean, that was meant to be the, like, kind of two-minute, but we took a bit longer over it, and I enjoyed it. But now we're going to move on to the section I like to call the big topic. And your big topic, surprise, surprise, is cancer. According to Cancer Research UK, one in two people born after 1960 will be diagnosed with cancer of some form during their lifetime. It's not comfortable to talk about, but it does need to be spoken about, which is exactly why we're here. This sounds horribly crass, but tell me about your cancer.
Yes, I was diagnosed last April, so 2018 being, and it wasn't very obvious, the symptoms, because lung cancer is very strange. I was diagnosed with stage 4 non-small cell lung cancer at the age of 29. I am the odd one out. It is quite an exceptional circumstance for somebody my age, but I would say cancer is definitely on the rise as a general, and especially amongst younger people as well. We're seeing more and more cancer cases.
Can I ask the question?
Go on.
That everybody, that I know, I've asked you this before.
Go for it.
Did you used to smoke?
Yeah, I was going to ask.
Yeah. So that's a very common question. So yeah, I did smoke in my early 20s. Leading up to the diagnosis, I hadn't been smoking for a few years actually. So yeah, I have smoked, but again, it's not a main factor of my, you know, of my disease or prognosis. 28% of lung cancer cases are actually non-smoking related. There's lots of modern factors involved. Like, cancer is quite clever. It's not as easy as to say, oh, did you smoke? That must be why you have cancer. There's just multiple reasons.
If it was
reasons.
A plus B, then it'd be a whole lot easier. Mm. Right?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And Deborah?
Because I get the same. I mean, for me, totally. I'm the person who was the vegetarian, relatively fit, that got bowel cancer at the age of 35. And the question I'm always asked is, did you eat a lot of red meat?
Do people ask you a lot of diet-related
things? So they assume naturally that it's diet-related.
That you were like, stuffing steaks in your...
And the reality is exactly like Simon's, in that about half of bowel cancer cases are related to, say, lack of fibre, lack of exercise. And we do know that. Yeah. So there are people that can prevent their cancers, but I wasn't one of them. But yeah, my situation is that at the age of 35, I was working as a deputy head teacher of a secondary school, and it hit me like a light bolt.
And what led you to the diagnosis?
So I had about 6 months of basically pooing blood, like not continuously, but I did have a change of bowel habits, and I think that's one of the key symptoms. But I had like really bad cramping, so it was like, you know when you cramp and then you like have to run to the loo. I was doing that, but it was getting worse and worse. And then I would say like every 3 days or something, or a couple of times a week, I would then get blood. And I remember going to the doctors and they just said, no, I think it's hemorrhoids, because it was fresh blood. So there's always this misconception. Mm-hmm. And actually, you just never know. So if you have anything that's on towards, you should just go to the doctors. But I had like convinced myself, and I was talking to someone about this the other day, I always had massive, massive, massive health anxiety. Mm. And I lived for years and years and years having gone through loads of CBT. So
to help deal with that.
And then it's really funny, because I was writing about it and I was like, I wonder whether almost my CBT almost
taught you out of it.
It taught me out of it, like, for 6 months, because whilst I went to the GP, I kept on saying, oh, no, but it's okay.
Yeah, is this your mental health speaking, or is it?
So you were over-rationalising the situation.
I was over-rationalising. Wow. I was saying it was stress.
Yeah.
And like the GPs would be like, oh, don't worry. And then I'd be like, oh, okay, it's fine. And actually, the reality is that I had stage 4 bowel cancer, like Soma. Oh. So we're both sitting here with stage 4. There isn't any stage 5. So in I suppose, both of our situations without sounding really serious. Like, I don't use the word terminal. I don't think you do either, do you?
No, but it is. This is the thing.
But it is.
It is what it is, which is that, yeah, like Deborah said, there's no stage five.
No.
Yeah. So it's the end of the line medically. They say, like, you can live, we can look to keep you comfortable.
We're being treated. I call myself incurable, but then I'm always incurable. I have incurable, like, shopping habits.
Yeah. It's probably quite fitting.
The way I look at it is I'm on treatment to try to extend my life for as long as I possibly can.
Yeah.
And I intend to do that for a very, very long time.
Were you told on diagnosis that it was stage four?
Yeah. Pretty much. Within for me, it happened within a couple of months, actually. But that was just more of a logistics of getting the right scans and the right results being read. But by the time I was diagnosed, so my cancer has spread from my bowel, funny enough, to my lungs.
Yeah.
So I had a bowel surgery to remove part of my bowel. But my biggest challenge historically has actually been my lungs. I ended up with about 8 tumours in my lungs, but they've all been removed. So I currently, to date, don't have any cancer in my lungs.
That's amazing.
Which is amazing. It's just my liver now instead.
The other vital organ.
And you've got the same. It's like, I call it splat the tumour.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's like whack-a-mole.
Whack-a-mole.
It's like that game, isn't it? And I'm like similar in Deborah's case, whereas like, yeah, the cancer, the primary is in my lung, but my lung literally, you know, I've not had any surgery on them. I've actually just been told my chest is stable. I've actually not really had a cough.
Wow.
You know, and the problem with cancer is it's when it metastasizes, when it moves around the body, that's when it becomes dangerous. So the ones that aren't behaving at the moment are the ones in my lymphatic system and my bone. So, yeah.
Between us, we've got every body part covered.
Do you know what I mean?
That's what I thought you were, girls. So winding back a bit to the moment of being diagnosed, talk to me about that. What are your first thoughts? And were you with your partners at that time? And then how does that immediate 24 hours roll out if it's not too painful for you?
No, that was like hell. So if anybody's listening who has experienced it, who has a partner experiencing it, or maybe they've gone through it themselves, I suppose you can liken it to any tragedy in your life. You kind of feel like you're being given a death sentence, and it's that kind of surreal moment when you're like, is this actually real? Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe it. I still look back now, and I had gone for a colonoscopy, which is basically a camera up your bum. And it's the gold standard for diagnosing anything that's really untowards in your gut. And it did take a while to get a referral to have that. And I just remember that everything fell silent in the room. I knew that something was wrong. I was asked the dreaded question. The dreaded question is, do you have somebody with you? Before I knew it, I was then being told that they had found a tumour. I then said, do you think it's cancerous? Because you automatically assume tumour is cancer. And the response was, in my professional opinion, yes, it is. And he knew 100% it was. He just gave me a tiny window of hope.
Really?
And that wasn't to be, because the biopsies came back and within 24 hours I was on a scanner, and then I was being told it was being removed. And the ball was rolling.
Wow.
And your mind, you just, looking back, I don't actually know how I put one foot in front of another. What about you?
I took it badly, and I think again, it's age as well. You just don't prepare yourself.
No,
cancer was like this thing that just happened to older people, and I was just young, doing my thing and living life. And then suddenly, I was just told this news. I just remember being in the room, and you only get so much time with the oncologists.
Yeah,
my now husband was with me. And I just thought, no, someone is just having a laugh. This can't be happening. Like, how can this be me? Like, obviously, the evidence was there. You know, I'm reading the piece of paper and it said stage four, all these words that you don't even understand, like adenocarcinoma and all these things. And everything was just flying around. Like, the room was just, yeah, I took it very badly.
And then I guess there's that horrible thing of then you've got to bring that news to all the people that you love most in the world.
Right.
Apart from your partners who are there. I mean, for you, Deb, obviously with your kids.
Yeah, with my kids. So I chose not to tell my kids straight away. So because the problem is that anybody going through a diagnosis, you know, it's not always straight cut. Like, unless maybe you're in a fast track and you've been told there and then you've got breast cancer. I know with some breast cancers, they can be slightly quicker to diagnose, potentially some other cancers. With me, until you actually get the tumour out with bowel cancer, you don't know how advanced it is.
Oh.
So they can guess and they can be quite, if it's spread, you know that. But for example, like when a lot of bowel cancers are caught early, actually you don't need any chemotherapy. You just need the operation. And then it's basically you go on your merry way and you just get monitored, which is amazing, and the chances of survival are amazing. So what I was hoping for is like never to have to get to the whole you've got kind of advanced cancer stage. They were 7 and 9 at the time, and they didn't need to know the word cancer. You know, we told them I was having an operation, but it was only then at that point did we actually know how serious it was.
And how much comprehension do you think they had when you did tell them?
I think retrospectively, my daughter was 7 at the time, just 7. So I think she only now is understanding. She's now 9 because I was diagnosed 2 and a bit years ago. I think my son, who's now 11, really does understand it. But I would say 7, I think, is a little bit too young for understanding. Yeah. You know what? I think they do cope pretty well. I think when I look at them, sometimes they're a bit fragile underneath. Mm. I think they're really good at putting on a really good external front. They're quite resilient kids because they don't have a choice. They kind of have to be.
Well, look at their mum.
Well, they just don't get any sympathy from me. Cut your knee. I've got cancer. Seriously.
Really trick my
But as a parent, the problem is you've got adult knowledge, you know. You can see the journey that is ahead for them. That's the thing about kids. They move on. Like, they deal with what's in front of them and they don't. But, yeah. And Simon, how did your family deal with it?
Yeah, so it was okay. I mean, obviously, my partner, my sisters understood straight away, being, you know, they were all born here, all understand, all, you know, speak coherent English and understand English. But I had difficulty explaining to my mother, you know, what cancer meant, let alone my diagnosis. And that was...
Did she grow up in...
Yeah, so she grew up in Pakistan, and then she had an arranged marriage and came to the UK in the 80s and raised, you know, me and my three sisters greatly, but just never kind of integrated in kind of Western society. She was just a homemaker. Mm-hmm. So her kind of community, her surroundings would be other, you know, South Asian women from the school run and obviously our kind of cousins and aunties and uncles and things like that. Illness is actually not really discussed. And this is a common theme here. Like, I've actually just started a group like on Facebook, and the stories that have been coming through that have just been, it's like new territory. But what I find, the common theme is that there's a lack of conversation, especially around cancer.
Yeah, which is, as we know, is where the problem lies, right? Unless we talk.
Is it something that people are really, are they ashamed of it?
Yeah, definitely. There's a shame element. It could be like that my family's cursed. It could be that, you know, that this was called for, you know, like, I come from a conservative Muslim background. I don't practice the faith fully myself, but, you know, the text and the kind of
the
upbringing, the belief system is that, you know, things are destiny, or in your kind of, it's written on the walls for you.
Yeah.
So you find that people, you know, we're getting information in the UK, but the outcomes are worse in the BAME community. So Black, Asian, ethnic minorities, they're being staged late, or they're not getting the right medical help, which is very scary.
Earlier, I mentioned that F&F Clothing, our sponsor, had surprised me with the work they do. Here's an example. They work with Genealogia, the industry's first software to grade denim on how sustainable it is. The lower the score, the more sustainable the garment is. This means that F&F Clothing are continually monitoring and reducing their environmental footprint, which sounds pretty ace to me. Is it your first thought when you wake up in the morning, or have you got to a stage where you can kind of, not put it to bed, but you can function quite normally some of the time?
So if I look at the last 3 months, it's really weird. Like, I work in very small windows. Like, I'm really scared. I have nothing in my diary after June. So I'm very free after June because I'm too scared to plan.
Really? Is that in your... Psychologically, that's kind of...
The fact that I've even gone up to June, like in December, I hadn't gone beyond February because I honestly didn't think I'd be alive for it.
So do you, for example, if an email comes in offering for you to do something in June, you just basically ignore it?
I basically go... Maybe.
Can we pencil that?
Can we pencil everything?
Really
pencils?
Faintly.
I pencil everything with a kind of, but you know, I have cancer, so anything can change. I'm getting a bit better at it.
Yeah, like, and that's mad because no one would ever think you're letting them down if you cancel. So,
yeah, I think it's a mentality, it's a mindset. So I would say that there are some days where actually, I feel pretty normal, and normal is really bloody good.
Yeah.
Like, I can't describe it. I'm not like on fire. I just feel like, you know what normal is to me, okay? And this is quite random. Normal is having enough energy to be sitting here today, to know that I'm about to go off to another meeting, to know that I've come from a meeting, yeah. right? To know that I'm basically then going to go and see my girlfriends later tonight, right? I get that for the vast majority of 37-year-olds who are maybe working or whatever and holding down jobs or whatever, that's probably a really average day, and they do that every day,
I mean,
five times a week.
I do beg to differ, though. I'm a 37-year-old, and that fills me with absolute fear. I often look at you, with or without cancer, think, how the bloody hell does she do it? Honestly.
That's so funny. But I'm somebody who, like...
I think you need to remember you're a mother of two. Why don't you chill your beans
well.
A bit?
That's that as well. But I think in my previous cancer life, before cancer life, I was just a grafter who would, like, leave the house really early, come back really late, and work my arse off, and did well as a result of it. Mm-hmm. But in terms of having enough energy to do that is yeah. like not something I can do every single day. Yeah. So when I have days that I can do that, or even a run of days, like a 2-week window where I feel like, oh my God.
You're living a normal life.
I'm like, oh, it's amazing to feel normal. I don't feel sick today or whatever it is. Because when I look back now, like December, January, and even parts of February, I was in the hospital like 3-4 times a week, basically saying, I can't do this. I was having a really bad allergic reaction to some drugs. And honestly, like, when you feel so ill that you like going to the loo is too much energy,
really?
You appreciate just getting on a train and coming in, you know, being normal.
Yeah, getting up and dressing out the door.
Yeah, that's all it is.
How about you?
I think generally, yeah, you do wake up and you go, okay, hang on, I do have cancer. Because it is just, I don't know. I don't know about you, but do you...
Is it
the first thing when you wake up? Is that really bad?
Well, I have to take on my drugs. So the drugs are a constant reminder. Mm. Like every single day, she says, going into her bag, realising that she's forgotten to take her drugs.
Said life-saving drugs. And I'll have to get up and I'll have to take my fatinib at 7 a.m. So, yeah.
And and you have to like control, like, I don't know about you, but I control like my food around it as well.
Yeah, I can't eat for an hour after, I can't eat for 2 hours before.
So your
routine is set up around cancer as soon as you wake up.
Or your appointments, like, am I in that day? Am I going to have a low day? So therefore, do I schedule that in my diary? Is it a good day or a bad day?
Mm. Deborah, with your kids, like, again, it must be tempting if you feel like that you want to spoil them absolutely rotten all the time and do everything with them. And then you're like, oh no, am I setting myself up for a, you know.
Yeah.
Mummy can't be the yes person all the time, but maybe that's your instinct to go there.
Yeah, it is a little bit, actually. I didn't think about that. Because I very much live in the now.
Mm.
So it's kind of like, well, why not? Why can't we do that? Because actually, I hate the idea of, you know, I used to think before I got cancer, it was always everything was in the future, right? Whereas now I'm like, I don't really know what's happening in the future. And I would say that my husband has become much better at trying to live for the now. To be fair to him, the whole reason like we actually have a house, we can actually like afford stuff is because he's a planner. Like we're the polar opposite people in our relationship. And actually one of you has to be or else like...
Can't be the same.
You can't be the same.
And that's really common. You have
it's really common. And I'm the spender. Like if we were both like me... Like,
someone's got to spend the cash.
Someone's got to spend the cash. Like if we were both like me, we're absolutely screwed. And actually, what I've had to pull back from him is saying, oh, it's all good and well having all these amazing savings or whatever, but I ain't going to see any of them.
So that's hard.
So let's go on holiday tomorrow.
How can you get cancer and family and everything right? You just can't.
And yeah, you're only navigating what you're navigating, right?
Yeah, and the arguments, like I say the arguments, that sounds, oh, the arguments. I would say... anybody who goes through this and it doesn't impact their relationship, not normal. There are elements of our relationship before that have absolutely been massively improved because of cancer.
Yeah.
Because you suddenly like a lot of the pettiness is irrelevant. But now we have the pressure of having to escape the intensity of what we actually deal with, which is, am I going to live or die tomorrow? Should we plan for Christmas? Should we not? Like, and the serious conversations that
especially at our age, you don't expect to ever be, you know,
you have to
that's,
face.
That's a conversation for later.
Yeah.
Think of your life in two sections. You think before cancer, after cancer. So before, I'd be like very much like, you know, we're just making an effort with each other. We're just a young couple getting on with things. I was working really hard and similar to you, like just really hard work ethic, really, you know, my job gave me so much joy. Mm-hmm. What I realised is that we were spending time together recently, but we weren't spending time just productively. He was taking me to the hospital.
That's not time, is it?
No, that's not. We were going to the hospital and then going for lunch after and stuff like that. I'm like, no, you need to actually block off time away from cancer. It doesn't leave you, but cancer takes up so much of your time and so much of your day sometimes. It can be really intensive. Like right now, I'm quite lucky, like just being in between. It's actually quite nice being in limbo because kind of left alone because you're like, you're stable, you're not life threatening, you don't know anything. So just leave you to it. And then like it can be go, go, go if they've got like a treatment plan.
Yeah.
But you have to make sure you make time to be you.
Yeah.
I agree with that. Like I have made a conscious effort to not have my husband with me in the hospital unless it's a major operation. If he's with me, emotionally, I'm actually worse.
You're worried about him too?
Because I'm worried about him, but also I crumble a bit.
Yeah, you allow yourself to go to that place because they know you're at your most vulnerable.
Exactly. Whereas, funny enough, I'm now at a very weird point where I pretty much do everything hospital related unless it's an operation. But I actually do most of it on my own.
Do you? And you find that the most...
I find it the most... It's very strange because over the years, the first year of treatment, I had like, you know, mates there every single session and we would like make fun of it and it was all great. Well, you know, it was shit, but you make the most of a rubbish situation. Mm-hmm. But what I've realised is that I then play out to it where you... show your vulnerabilities and you start panicking and you start going, I'm really scared of this.
If you can
really
just keep it within yourself.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it's a positive thing to keep it within yourself, but I think it's a coping mechanism for me.
Can I ask you about how your relationship with your bodies has changed? Like, do you feel like you've got more acceptance of them or do you feel angry with them or do you not even think about it?
I think for me, before the disease, I didn't really think about my body. But now I'm very much like, I can't believe you're here. It's like nearly a year. And, you know, because by the time I ended up in A&E where I got diagnosed, I was actually very much life threatening. So I did nearly die.
And then here we are.
I can say it out loud.
Nearly a year. And
it's just weird to like, you know, sometimes I kind of brush over it. But yeah, I got diagnosed in A&E. It wasn't pretty. I had like a chest swelling. I had breathing issues in my sleep from a tumour obstructing a main artery. And then just to recover from all that.
Yeah, that it can pull itself back.
Yeah. It's down to the patient to actually heal.
Yeah, it's true.
You know,
they
it's do like
their
the
bit,
surgeons
and then you hand it over.
The doctors can't actually, you know, it's actually down to the patient to heal. And I think, how amazing is your body? It heals and it recovers. And yeah, so I'm all about appreciating the body.
Yeah.
How do you
feel? I feel a little bit like it betrayed me. When I got diagnosed, my biggest issue was probably stress. So I definitely was mentally stressed and highly strung. Mm. I would say, funny enough, since I've had cancer, like that has actually massively changed, which is quite interesting when I think about it. Like I actually sleep really well at night now.
Do you?
Whereas like before I had cancer, I didn't. I was actually like working out a lot. I was
vegetarian.
Like apart from the stress side, I was kind of like okay and I never really saw it coming. The more I find out about cancer, the more, exactly like you said at the beginning, it's a multi-complex, multifaceted disease.
Very nearly inevitable.
Going back to the body thing, the thing that annoys me is when people are more concerned about whether they've got the right shaped jaw or all these kind of things. And I'm thinking, oh my God, get over this. Because like, get strong, get healthy, build your immune system up. It's not going to cure you of cancer, but you know what? It might reduce your chances. I asked a really top oncologist the other day on a radio show. I said, can you cancer-proof your life? And he basically said, honestly, no. There are very obvious things that you can do to give you the best chance. And so it would seem stupid not to do those. Does that make sense?
Yes. Like you're not smoking.
Yeah, exactly. Or like being morbidly obese. Like, why would you just not?
Yeah.
Like, if you knew
put
that
some cream on. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. But beyond that, like, you know, everything in balance, really. And so when it comes to my body.
Do you find that realization comforting or.
That's a good question. I do find it comforting because you don't want to be blamed for your own cancer. You don't ever want it to feel like it's your fault.
No, and that whole, we haven't touched on it, but that fighting cancer, you know.
I do think it also brings about a frustration. The frustration being when people start preaching about, like, I'm so fit and healthy, I'm so, like, earnest and protected from the world, and you just think
you've got no idea
especially in the age of like social media. I think people just got to be careful with what they claim.
I totally
you know when you're
agree.
Just like if one in two are going to get cancer, be careful what you're claiming.
And
out
you know
there.
What like both of us right have watched people that we care about die from cancer. Right, fit, young, healthy people who
it doesn't add up.
And for every person where, you know, whatever diet or whatever they followed has cured their cancer, I guarantee you there is as many other people who that hasn't worked for. And being somebody who's in my position, I do everything. I drink the green smoothies, I exercise, like, so people assume that I don't do it. Does that make sense? But I honestly don't know whether I will be around for a while.
No, in fact, I was looking, doing some research and looking around your podcast. And there's a bit where on the BBC website about how you should talk to people with cancer. And one of the things is don't be blooming offering them alternative therapies all the time. And I'm going to read out the other list because I thought it was really useful. You don't always need to be positive. It must be infuriating to people like pepping you up. Guys, let me think, this is fucking shit.
Oh, jeez.
Listen. God, people are not very good at that, are they? And be specific with help. Are there ways in which some people have really come forward to help you in this during this time?
Yeah, I'd say it's been interesting, like me fresh off the boat, fresh on the scene, because your experiences must change and evolve now.
Yeah,
going
so
into year two or three, is it?
Yeah, into year three now, and I reckon my views on everything have changed.
Yeah, initially some friends came forward, people I didn't expect came forward, and you're like, wow, like, you know, I can't imagine like this kind of chapter of my life without you now, and you've been so fantastic in it all. But then a lot of people stepped away. Some people came forward because of the sheer shock, just to kind of like put in their two, you know,
that was their
money's
coping,
worth, you know, and they were sending me like long, you know, memory notes on Facebook and all this, you know, crap. I think everyone has egos, right? And everyone just wants to get their own stuff out there. And so especially with, I noticed with social media, we're all so connected. So if this happened to me 10, 15 years ago,
It'd be very different.
Matey from school wouldn't have known.
No, but now they do.
Matey wouldn't have known about it from school. And so I found it was quite overwhelming when I came out online on socials and stuff with the diagnosis. But since then, like, I've got my solid friends. I think that's what it teaches you is what matters. So I haven't got time to talk rubbish with
people you don't really care about.
I know it sounds really harsh, but no, I haven't
got time. That's liberating though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You just understand yourself a lot more and you value your time. Yeah.
You have to be a bit selfish with it because I made them. It's not a mistake, but your time is precious, right? And you know that when you're faced with, well, anything really. But you also realise that everybody will handle your cancer in a particular way. And some ways that they want to handle that is they want a piece of you, like, because it comforts them.
Yes,
does that make sense? I have to see you because it comforts them.
It makes
them feel better. But then what I was doing is I was almost becoming a people pleaser, where I would go around and see all these like long lost friends I hadn't seen. I had a cup of coffee. I was like socially knackered.
Yeah.
Like, does that make sense? And actually what I've now pulled back on, but I would say it's taken me 2 years, is to pull back, to try to make more of an effort. I haven't cracked it, but to try to actually spend my time with my actual friends.
Yeah, that's a revelation, isn't it?
Which is a revelation.
But it's hard,
itself.
Isn't it? Especially you're getting so many offers your way and they sound great, but actually probably what you want to do is have a bottle of wine with your besties on a Friday night with a takeaway.
Yeah.
What are your hopes for the future for yourselves, but also around the conversation around cancer generally?
We've both got so many hopes. I'll start. So I'm looking to open up the conversation more in the BME community.
Which is smashing, by the way. I think you're doing an amazing job.
Thank you. And I mean, obviously, you gave me the opportunity to go on the pod and it was such a great experience. And from that, people started just
reaching out,
sending their stories. And I was like, right, that's how the Facebook group started. So I've started a BAME cancer support group on Facebook, which hopefully you can search.
Yep.
Doing a little plug there.
Yeah, do
that's
it.
BAME Cancer Support. So join it. It's a closed group. You can share your experiences, whether you've been through cancer or going through cancer, if you're from the BAME community. And it's just about sharing your cultural difficulties as well as your cancer diagnoses, which, you know, because culture and cancer are totally different things. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's a lot of work to do. And hopefully we can just make a little step. And, fingers crossed, things will look a lot brighter.
Yeah, we both want to live.
Yeah, I mean that's
living as well.
Yeah, that's like, high up the
genuinely,
list.
Genuinely, like it's just we're both on probably quite newish targeted drugs, right?
Yeah,
but the problem is, like, I just never know. Like, I have just received positive news from my latest scan results. So I'm sitting here today. No one else knows about that, apart from you guys.
We're both here smiling.
Which is amazing. You know, I never expect shrinkage. I'm not in the category where I ever get any form of shrinkage. So when you're somebody with metastatic cancer, if you're stable, it kind of means that your cancer is... It's not sleeping, but it's almost sleeping a little bit, isn't it? It's not actively...
Doing its thing. Going to take your life, basically.
I was going to liken it to, like, driving. You, like, when it's on the march, you're on the motorway, and when you are... when it's sleeping, you're, like, bumbling at the red red light at the moment.
Speeding.
You don't want speeding fines. In cancer land, you do not want speeding fines. But essentially, I'm hopefully stalled at a red light for a long time, but it just essentially buys me options, and none of us know. Like, unfortunately, like, every single day I see people dying very, very quickly, and I do not know what will happen to me. I just want to get on Strictly, but that's never gonna happen.
Yeah, come on people, we've talked about this a
lot. Amazing if you're on Strictly.
I just want to change perception. I mean, I think just carry on talking.
Also you just want to dance. So to wind this up slowly, because we could actually talk for the rest of the afternoon, I always like to throw it out to the good people of Instagram and ask them what they think. So that is what I've done. I first of all asked them to finish the sentence. Cancer is ... terrifying, an absolute fucker, too common, fear and appreciation, scary, a bastard, worryingly inevitable, cruel, dark, not necessarily a death sentence, life, doesn't give a shit who you are, something I have beaten, which I love that last one. If you've been affected by cancer, what advice would you give others? Take it one day at a time. Be open to anything. Do not Google. Try to find a balance between being positive and realistic. Accept all the help. Keep talking. Be selfish and do the things you enjoy. Don't be afraid to cry. Don't push people away through fear. Ask all the questions. Record lots of videos. Try to remember to keep living while you're fighting. Look after yourself when looking after others. Be honest with your kids. Love hard and never leave anything unsaid. And then the last thing I ask them is, what do you wish you could ask about cancer but are too afraid to? Why do they offer chemo to people at the end of their life? I think it's cruel and painful. What do I say to people when they've been diagnosed? How do mothers cope after a child's been diagnosed? In follow-up appointments, do they check you thoroughly for all cancers? Are people with money getting better treatment? Are you always scared? Does it hurt? What lifestyle changes would you make after you've been cured? Do the drugs sometimes affect your personality? Does the fear of it coming back ever go away? And is it even avoidable these days? I'm just going to leave them out there for us all to ponder. They're good ones.
Good questions.
Girls, it's been an absolute delight, as I knew it was. And the thing is, I feel really fortunate to have you in my life because I've asked all the questions, and so my palms don't sweat when I talk about cancer anymore. I've read your books. I'm like super fans, and what you're doing is really amazing and you're helping everybody. So the very last thing is, remembering that this podcast is about being honest, who do you wish you could have an honest conversation with, and what would you say? Could be a celeb, a friend, someone who's passed, a younger version of yourself.
I mean, I would speak to my younger self, but I would speak to my 22-year-old self. Mm-hmm. But that is over my health anxiety. Yeah. And like anybody who has health anxiety, it's crippling. It's absolutely crippling. And the fear is crippling. But funny enough, the reality is less crippling.
Wow, what a crazy thing to try and like get your head around.
Well, I'm kind of like not really getting the answer to that, Clemmie, so I'm going to go with the younger self as well.
Yeah.
And I'd say, you know what, from a very young age, I had to deal with a lot of stress, and I'll just say, you know what, it's going to be all right.
Yeah.
Because, yeah.
When you're faced with
the worst has happened now. Yeah. And we're still here. I think accepting the diagnosis and looking to live with it is very important. When you're fighting with that diagnosis, it's going to make you more sick and, you know, have extra anxiety on top of what's quite the most stressful experience of your life.
Yeah, totally agree. Great advice.
Well, you're both absolutely remarkable. I've been Clemmie Telford. They've been Saima Thompson and Deborah James. And this has been Honestly. Thank you for listening. Please rate, review, subscribe and tell your mates about it. Thank you very much. Ugh, that chat was every bit as special as I knew it would be. I feel forever grateful to be able to do this as my job. The people I talk to blow me away. But the fact is, this wouldn't have been possible without having F&F Clothing on board as a sponsor. They've supported me on my mission, okay, obsession with wanting to have powerful conversations with all sorts of people on all sorts of subjects with nothing off limits. Thank you again, F&F Clothing. I've been Clemmie Telford, and this has been Honestly Podcast. Thank you for joining me in getting frank and getting open. We've hit that part, the shameless plug, but at least I'm being honest, right? That's the name of the game. So please do share your thoughts and reviews, tell your mates all about it, and better still, why not press the big subscribe button? That way you'll get weekly doses of unadulterated honesty from me, Clemmie Telford. Thanks very much.